Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited, no purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Hello all, and welcome to the Fantasy and Sci-Fi Fanatics podcast. I am your host, Daniel Kubal. Today I have a very special guest, TJ Cooper. TJ, how are you doing today?
Doing good, man. How are you?
Oh, awesome. Anytime I can talk to somebody about their books and hold it in my hand, I feel a lot better. So, yeah. My wife, you sent me this amazing book, and then another author, Jeffrey Smith, sent me two of his, one of which I was like wanted for so long, and I was like, I usually don't do paperbacks anymore, so I held up both of your guys at the same time, and I think it's in both videos. I was like, these are such cool covers. Like, sweet, this is really cool. So I'm really excited. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about why I'm excited about your book here in just a little bit, but thank you so much for coming on the show today and talking to us about your book and your writing experience and letting us kind of pick your writer brain. Really appreciate it.
Oh, I appreciate the opportunity to come on and just talk about it with you, man. I really enjoy your podcast. So I just listened to the J.L. Odom podcast about her.
Oh, she was so much fun.
A lot of fun. I still haven't read her book yet. I know she's
on my list for next year. Yeah.
She just won the SPFBO. So I'm really excited for her about that. So that
makes super me cool.
Really anxious to read it as well.
Yeah. And I got to plug my man, Adrian, a friend of mine, M. Gibson, who came super tight, right? Second place, but it was so closest one in SPFBO history, which I understand because I've read his book, but not hers yet. So that's on my reading list at the beginning for next year. But Mushroom Blues was absolutely amazing from a sci-fi and kind of like urban fantasy, like kind of like mystery vibes on a sci-fi world. It was like super, super good. So if you guys haven't checked out Adrian's book, I've interviewed him twice, talked about the contest during. It was cool to talk the after effects with J.L. Odom, but they were both like such gracious people towards each other. It was like crazy. So it's very like both of them, like how to act, I think, in the industry when you win or lose. So it was super cool. Yeah. So her book just sounds amazing. I actually bought both of them. So I'm like really excited just to, I love military fantasy. So
absolutely.
So and I love desert settings too. Her and I were just like vibing on the desert settings. Even before the chat, we were like talking and it was super cool. But thank you for checking that one out. Everybody should check that out though. She was amazing. Adrian's always amazing. It was really fun. But we're going to get into you and your journey and your books because I love talking to people. I'm like, like Smaug, right? From The Hobbit, like, or Gollum. I love my preciouses, right? And I need the new shiny thing. My wife always teases me. She's like, read this book before getting another one on Kindle. I'm like, what language are you speaking? Is it Elvish, Orcish? Like, leave me alone, you know? Klingon, like, I don't know what it is, but it's not my language, you know? So what has your writing journey been like up until this point?
It's been pretty non-existent up to this point, really.
I feel ya.
Yeah. I just had always kind of wanted to, really. I had written, I think, like a couple books. I say books. I wrote like one sequel to Return of the King, but it was Return of the King, the movie, not the book. And it was about Aragorn's son. Like each chapter was like a page long. So it wasn't really anything very special about that.
That's a cool fan fiction though. That's awesome.
Yeah. Oh, it was definitely fan fiction. I remember I made my parents write an email. This was like right after Return of the King, like came out on DVD and everything like that. And I made my parents like write a fan email to Peter Jackson about like, hey, I had this idea for a sequel to Lord of the Rings. And he wrote back. He was like, oh, thanks so much. You know, we're a little busy. And
that's so
but
cool.
Like, you know, this was back in like email days. So, you know, it's probably
still, that's amazing. That's super cool.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
Yeah, so that was
funny. I would frame that email. I would put that right on the wall.
If we could find it, I don't know. Email might have changed, might have gotten lost in the digital space there. So
cool. That's super. That's a cool story, though. That's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
That's really neat.
But no, it's been kind of non-existent. When I was kind of leading up to writing, I'm sure, you know, I know many of the self-published people have been watching like a lot of Brandon Sanderson's lectures. Like the ones
great lectures
on YouTube. Yeah. I would just listen to those just constantly, mainly as like a podcast form, or like, you know, I watched one of them, like I put it up on the TV and everything like that. I had my notebook out. I was taking notes, like I was actually in class.
Yeah.
You know, and then it was very helpful. I will say that it was very, very helpful. But at the same time, I think once you actually start writing yourself, you'll kind of figure out more of, okay, this works for you. It may have worked for Sanderson or somebody else, or, you know, whenever somebody else talks about writing, but this works for you. And then I would find out certain, you know, especially with writing this book, I definitely figured out, like outlining. I changed completely how I outline now by writing this book.
Interesting.
I had, you know, originally I would just do like bullet points, but it got to the point where my bullet points were, you know, pages long sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
So I'd be like, okay, let's just scrap that. Let me just write down all of my ideas for this chapter. And if I have like a good line or something like that, I'll just, you know, it's already in my head. I'll go ahead and write that down too. And so that definitely changed a lot. I had, you know, taken the advice of Brandon Sanderson and being like, hey, just prove to yourself that you can write a book first before you publish it. So I had written, you probably see on the bookshelf, I'm a big Halo and Star Wars fan. So I'd written two Halo books, and I wrote a Star Wars book just to like prove that I could write it. They'll probably never see the light of day to anybody but me.
I've heard that before, and then Ibn J. Hearn got to write his, and I read it. It was pretty good. So,
yeah, I mean, who knows if anybody from Lucasfilm or Halo Studios is watching? Hey, I got ideas. So I just wrote those just to kind of prove that, you know, hey, I could at least, the length is fine. My writing will get better like the more I write. So then this one, Shadows Vendetta, which is the first book of a four-part series, a Bond of Silver. I almost called it a Ball of Silver. Yeah, there we go. So very, very proud of that cover. I didn't do it. I'm just very happy with the art direction and the art design and cover design, just how it turned out. Just absolutely gorgeous.
I just have to plug our other video here where I that's going to be a couple of days after this, so make sure you guys check that out. I actually videotaped the unboxing of the book and talked a lot about just the typography, the colors, the art, blurb, stuff like that. So just wanted to say, make sure you guys check that out, because I think you guys will enjoy some of the things that I pointed out about TJ's book. So super cool. One of them, in which it's going to be hard for me to do here, but when you, the cover's really cool, but
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Fiscally responsible. Financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
When you actually pull it out to its full, I mean, it just really adds to it. And I know that I just want to bring it up just because you mentioned the cover. There are so many things. Like, I asked, like, so my first Urban Fantasy full cover, I was like, the guy, the artist, like Tom Edwards, was like, do you want the whole thing? I'm like, you bet I do, because I want something as cool as you have, you know, when you actually like pull the whole thing out. with this scene. Yeah. I was like, I want to be able to see the whole scene. Because I think I just want to point out to people, because it's part of not craft, but, you know, with writing. But if you're independently published, and even if you're traditionally published, I think you should really be, you know, thinking about how you're selling. So, you know, if I see this whole piece of art, I'm, and you, you know, you advertise it anywhere, right? With the typography, without, you know, the whole thing, I'm like, holy crap, I need that in paperback, you know? Like,
yeah, yeah.
That's exactly the type of thing you want people to do, you know? So I just pointed that out in the video. I'm like, this is the type of book, you know, like cover that makes people not just want it on Kindle, makes it, you know, they want a physical copy. And a lot of people will do the Kindle for cheaper and then buy a physical copy, you know, if they really like the book, which I think is a really good just marketing strategy. So I think it's really genius that you did the full cover that way. It looks incredible.
Oh, thank you very much. And I just kind of just gave the art direction of it. You know, the whole talent behind everything definitely belongs to both Nino Is, who I'm pretty sure many people who are watching have seen his artwork all over the place. He did the probably what he's most known for in terms of the book space is his work on the 11th Cycle.
Oh, book by that's a great one. Hartman.
Just absolutely gorgeous cover art. And then I can't get another one out because it's there. I got too many books stacked all over the place. but who did the cover design, Bodhi Dog Design, who did like the typography and kind of the color overlay of it and everything was a Bodhi Dog Design, who's been doing Philip C. Quantrell, who's been doing like the Echo Saga his current series of Time of Dragons. He did all of his, cover designs, just absolutely phenomenal job. And both of them, have just been amazing to work with and very inspiring, and felt like I just made a couple new friends in it, so which was really nice.
I think it's kind of hard maybe on my camera, even though I got a newer quality camera, but like if you actually get the physical book cover, it really feels like the main character on there is like actually going to like come out. And the way that he did, just like, you know, I just love the way that the edges and everything worked, like even the typography, like I hope people can see it, but like the bowstring comes right through. I mean, there's just so many little pieces that make it really unique. So I would strongly recommend, if people are watching, to go to our description where you can find TJ's links, and I would strongly recommend getting your own paperback, because this is definitely you and Jeffrey Smith, those are like the two that I've gotten a lot sent to me recently. No offense to anybody else, but those are like the two like most excited. I showed my wife, she was like, okay, like those are really cool. We'll figure out how to put another bookshelf in the basement. I was like, we did it, guys. So thank you, TJ.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. Yeah, man. Awesome. No, anything to help grow the library, and anything to, you know, encourage you to get more book space, because Lord knows I certainly need it too. So
I think I'm officially a library now. I think you have to have like 1,000 books to be like official. We were looking at some of my dudes and I 2 years ago. Yeah. My wife, she's like, you have like 5 libraries now. I brought a bunch of my stuff from my old classroom when I was teaching English and stuff home. And then I haven't had space in my new school and classroom the last 3 years to bring a lot of books in. So she's like, when are you going to get these out of here? I was like, oh, I am really trying. But really, I'm trying to get that library status. Hope she's not watching this right now. But yeah, what an amazing book. So speaking of books, though, and your book, what genre or genres do you currently write in and why?
Just fantasy right now. So maybe that'll change in the future. We'll see, you know, if this ends up not necessarily becoming like a lucrative thing, but just if this, you know, I really enjoy writing, and I do enjoy other different genres other than fantasy. Fantasy just really spoke to me just to start out. I've always been just a massive fan of, you know, Lord of the Rings, especially just reading fantasy too. I don't know what it is just about getting lost in such a, it's almost like coming home, you know what I mean? Like it's, you know, there's different genres of like cozy fantasy, epic fantasy. But even if I'm reading like something as dark as like Joe Abercrombie or something like that from the first Thaw series, I still feel like that cozy feeling of like, ooh, I'm getting lost in a world of something like that. Even though these are all horrible people, I'm still, you know, I'm still having a really great time with it, you know? So it's, I don't know what it is about that. It's just the sense of adventure, the sense of just exploring something and kind of like this natural environment. Cause that's what we think of when we think of mostly in fantasy, everything's like in wide mountain ranges and forests and open deserts with, you know, maybe there's a city or two out there, or maybe there's like a lost ruin or something. It's like that sense of exploration, I think, is very fun, especially very intriguing to explore within fantasy, just to, you know, either deal with something that's very familiar yet different, or deal with something that's completely unique in and of its own right. You know, similar to like, you know, like what Brandon Sanders is doing with the Stormlight Archive with Roshar, you know, like there's very, very unique setting compared to a lot of other, very much compared to my own setting of just like, it's your typical fantasy type woods, mountains, open plains, stuff like that. But, you know, and then what you were talking about, Adrian Gimson's world, you know, his is very much like a futuristic type fantasy setting, you know?
Yeah, there were a lot of fantasy elements in there. It was really, which I wasn't expecting, because like, yeah, like I think that's what I like more, because you got Star Wars behind you. I was always like, oh, I love science fiction. And I realized like, oh, I actually like sci-fi fantasy the most.
It's hard
because that exploration, though, that's just, sorry, I'm having a breakthrough, because the best parts, I think, of some of the books behind you were like Luke discovering old Jedi knowledge, or, you know, where they discovered old technology from these past empires, or, you know, our peoples or something like that, or the Sith or something. So I think that like, it's fun, right, to go with them to new worlds. And it's funny, right, where they have all this technology, we assume, right, that all the worlds and stuff have been explored. But I think that's the fun part about it, is that they have so many worlds that aren't explored or aren't explored fully. So you get to be with the characters exploring. So I just want to, I just think that you pointed that out really well. And I never really realized that's why I liked fantasy or sci-fi when they do that kind of thing. So that makes total sense. That's super cool.
Yeah. Well, it's that same kind of, you know, I think that's why fantasy video games are so popular too, especially for like RPG type stuff, because you want to incentivize the player to go out and explore the world. And usually it's fantasy setting, you know, fantasy setting type set video games set in a, within a fantasy world, that are usually, I think, the best at that. You know, I think of Elden Ring, you know, Breath of the Wild, Witcher 3, games like Skyrim, you know, the big one. You know, so I think it's very much a sense of wonder and just, again, that adventurous vibe that, you know, you're going on.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
This podcast is sponsored by IQ Bar.
I've got good news and bad news. Here's the bad news. Most protein bars are packed with sugar and unpronounceable ingredients. The good news? There's a better option. I'm Will, and I created IQ Bar plant protein bars to empower doers like you with clean, delicious, low-sugar brain and body fuel. IQ bars are packed with 12 grams of protein, brain nutrients like magnesium and lion's mane, and zero weird stuff. And right now, you can get 20% off all IQ bar products, plus free shipping. Try our delicious IQ bar sampler pack with 7 plant protein bars, 4 hydration mixes, and 4 enhanced coffee sticks. Clean ingredients, amazing taste, and you'll love how you feel. Refuel smarter, hydrate harder, caffeinate larger with IQ bar.
Go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Again, go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20.
Quest with these people, and they're discovering maybe what's familiar with them, but it's unfamiliar to you. So it's fun to kind of just explore that, I think. And I think fantasy does, I think that's probably the best genre that it definitely does in. And I do like that you bring up Star Wars as a sci-fi fantasy, because I think some people kind of just, you know, coordinate off into sci-fi. I'm like, no, it's very much fantasy first, then sci-fi afterwards.
I fully
defend that, of being like, it's very much a fantasy story first, and then it's sci-fi. So trust me, the fantasy elements are a lot more pushed to the forefront than the sci-fi parts are.
I've like argue with people about that, and I'm like, the Force like controls. I'm like, you're starting with, and what's the best part in my opinion, right? Besides the exploration, it's like the exploration of the Force through, you know, the universe through it. Like, I think Yoda says it best, right? Like, it binds us, connects us. Like, brings the galaxy together. It's like everything I think revolves around that fantasy aspect, you know, and like even the lightsabers, right? Like, yeah, it's a sci-fi technology, but it's really a fantasy weapon with a sword, right?
Oh, absolutely. It's Excalibur, yeah, yeah. Basically. You know?
Yeah. I also think like you bring up like great video games, but like Dragon Age, the first one, I think was so fun.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
You get to explore so much of the world. You get to go to meet the dwarves. You get to go down, you know, that was like some of the best gameplay I've ever played was when you got to, you know, re-explore some of their old, you know, haunts and dungeons and defeat some of their old enemies and stuff and discover, Oblivion, Skyrim. I love going, you know, whether you're going to the Dwarven ruins or some of the Elvish ones, and, you know, or the Dwemer, sorry, or the Dwarves, right? Yeah, it's always fun. That's what my favorite part is on those games, is just to, like, Oblivion, Skyrim is just to go. And that's what I would do at Morrowind, too. I, like, barely ever did the main quest. I just would just...
Yeah.
Just to hang out, right? Just to explore the world, get some world building in and learn how to do it from a game perspective. It's just absolutely amazing. So
Well, I think Oblivion and Skyrim did it best because if you followed the main story, they usually would make the quest markers really far away in the map. So as you walk there, you're just discovering all these new different pathways.
Yeah, you had to.
You end up kind of forgetting the main storyline of what's going on. Like, I remember it's in the main story when you're going down into the Dwemer city of Blackreach, but it's, you know, underneath Markarth, and there's a whole, I think there's like two different side quests in Blackreach, a city underneath the city. And, you know, no, you don't find the Elder Scroll in Blackreach. Oh my gosh. I haven't played the main quest in Skyrim in so long. So
I haven't played it since before my son was born. So it's like almost 3 years now.
It's been a while.
But you make a good point though. Like Oblivion had, like, I remember there was I thought, not Skyrim was cool with the writing, but like I thought it was second place still to Oblivion, because Oblivion, there were so many quests where I was just like, holy crap, like they were written so well. And I don't think, like, I think like Diablo 2 is my favorite, particularly with the expansion set with or the pack or whatever, with some of the quests and the writing. I mean, it was like you just went on really cool quests. It was just really fun, you know, from a story standpoint. And then I think Oblivion for me is like number two. And then maybe like Baldur's Gate 2, the original, like the OG, was just really fun, you know. But like they were so much fun. Like the gameplay was great, but I think the stories were just amazing that they were helping you tell through that type of medium. And it was just really, really fun, right? To be those characters and to go through those worlds. So, but again, that's what we're trying to do with this medium, right? It's only fair.
Yeah, exactly. We're trying to kind of introduce it, tell the main story without having to do so much side content, you know.
I want to just do a cozy fantasy with like side quests, like, you know what I mean? You never get the main story, you only get my guy and his crew, like the side quests, you know. Like, I think that would be so much fun. So yeah, it's really funny.
Yeah, that would be that'd be a very interesting idea. That would be a very
Okay, I gotta like put my man.
There's an idea right now.
No. Well, like I saw Roland, like he had Sword and Thistle, and that one was so cool because it was essentially a side quest. But I thought he did such a great job because the guy basically is like, his main character is like kind of done with main quests, but like he does these side quests. Essentially, people pay him, and he's a mercenary for doing side quests. And the last like particular one he goes on, it was just such a great story. But I was like, my mind's been percolating because I'm like, I'm not much of a tea shop guy, but like, having somebody go on a side quest being urban fantasy, it totally changed my idea about writing cozy fantasy. Because for me, cozy, like you just said earlier, right? Like the world feels familiar and it feels like your home. So for me, cozy fantasy is being in the genre and you doing something fun with the characters and doing some exploration like he did in that book. So I think that you're definitely onto something. So it's interesting, I think, when you think about cozy. But yeah,
I've got an idea, but I won't share it out loud just in case somebody steals it, because I can't trademark stuff. So I'm thinking of like something. I'm like, oh, that'd actually be pretty cool. We'll talk about it afterwards. But yeah,
cool. No, I look forward to that. That's awesome. I'm glad I could get somebody an idea.
Yeah,
the teacher in me, like, I can't help it. I can.
Yeah, exactly. You can't help it. Go back to your roots.
Yeah, yeah. But now we're going to talk about really like what's like my favorite question is talking specifically about your book, A Shadow's Vendetta. And if you don't mind telling us a little bit about what it's about and how you came up with this idea.
Oh my gosh, this is always the hardest question. Like every time I look at this question, I'm like, oh, I have an idea of how I can pitch my book. And then it completely changes as soon as somebody asks me the question. I'm like, oh crap, I can't remember. A Shadow's Vendetta, like I said at the beginning, it's essentially it's act one of a four act structure within a series called The Bond of Silver. So A Shadow's Vendetta is really about kind of like introducing the world, introducing the characters, really introducing the stakes and everything like that. Starts off with two of the main characters, 40 and Talik. Talik, who's also known as the Shadow, who's on the cover. So I've got my... Oh, yeah, it's up here. I've got my hardcover.
I got you.
So, yeah, that guy right there.
What an awesome character.
Yeah. No, I really love everything about the character design and everything of it. So, yeah, it was really awesome. The Shadow's kind of... He's had some stuff happen to him. And then 40 and the Shadow cross paths in the first chapter. So that's not really a spoiler. So that scene actually right there is in the first, is the first chapter. So,
that's cool.
Which is pretty cool. Well, there's a prologue and then there's chapter one. So I won't spoil what's in the prologue. But you know, they cross paths and then some stuff is kind of just revealed about, you know, these two might be bonded in a certain type of way. Again, I'm trying not to reveal too much. The main...
That's fair. I just need you to wait till January because you're on my...
Yeah. yeah, exactly. The main point of it, though, is that I wanted to tell like a fantasy story that was mainly told through the perspective of elves.
Cool.
And because every... Yeah. Every POV character except for one is an elf in this book.
Oh, that's good to know. I love me some elves.
I was really, really inspired by Tolkien's The Silmarillion. I know some people are like, man, it's a slog to get through. I'm like, man, I love that book. I don't know what y'all are talking about, man. So
I'm down there.
Yeah.
People are like, oh, why'd you do that? I'm like, I thought that was a fabulous TV show. I thought that was a great comic. I thought that was a great book. Like shows, right? Like each to their own, you know, like everybody's different. If Papa Tolkien, right, who helps to start the genre, people are like, like, I think it's only fair to say that we just need to find our audience too, even for, you know, not even within the genre, but for particular books, you know, that you write or within the genre or the genres that you write in. So,
yeah, exactly. So I kind of just wanted to tell like a story like that. And it was after a reading session that I had, you know, one of the few times that I'd reread The Silmarillion, was just looking for other books like told from this perspective of elves. And I couldn't really find any, at least like for some that I was really looking for, you know. And I was, you know, in the back of my mind, like, you know, thinking of different ways to, you know, kind of express my creative outlet. And, I was reading the Dragon's Blade trilogy, the first book in it, The Reborn King by Michael R. Miller. And I got to the very end of it and I read about the author and I hadn't realized that he had self-published this book. I thought it was a traditionally published book. Yeah. So that
he sold enough copies where you would think that.
Yeah, exactly. So it got to that point where I was like, oh, I didn't know you could do that. And then that just made me go down a rabbit hole of looking at all these different people that have self-published before, and just finding all these really incredible, amazing works that have been done that, you know, it's unfortunate that they weren't given a chance in traditional publishing, but at the same time, I'm kind of happy that they didn't, because otherwise we wouldn't have had this medium where they could have expressed themselves in this way, know, and we wouldn't have gotten these stories either way, you know. So I'm really happy that they have, you know, taken it upon themselves to express themselves and give us these stories, because otherwise we wouldn't have gotten them. So he was really a big inspiration and kind of like me figuring that out, figuring out that I could self-publish as well. I kind of went through a little low point in my life. I kind of had this idea of writing a book in mind, and I kind of just sat there at like a lunch table one day and just wrote out the first chapter without really kind of planning anything. I'm like, oh, just let me just see this go where this goes. At first, you know, 40, one of the main characters in it was a human, and by like the end of the chapter he was an elf, so I didn't like go back and change anything. I just kind of like wrote what I was feeling, so that really helped out a lot. Just lots of different ideas, you know, like I wanted to make sure that I think it's pretty obvious that I'm very much inspired by Tolkien, not only by the books, but by Peter Jackson's films as well, you know, the Lord of the Rings and the Hobbit trilogy. A pretty big fan of Warhammer fantasy as well.
I love that.
I think some people maybe could see a little bit in there. Big fan of history and everything like that too. There's one character in it that's like a big mythological type figure. His name's Alzindir, but it's also like pretty similar to Alexander the Great. So I'm like, I don't care if people put two and two together. It's okay. That's kind of the point of it. So, yeah. So I just kind of wanted to write a story, you know, that I really wanted to read. And that was kind of the initial spark of it, you know, I wasn't really finding a book out there that I was really wanting to read that was kind of like the Silmarillion, but told in a more like personal level, you know? It kind of had like the same type of depth of elven mythology that Tolkien was writing. But not really told in that very third person limited, very on the ground, not necessarily from above, you know, like kind of speaking about the gods, you know, everything like that. That's to answer your question. Sorry if I just really rambled off on a bunch of stuff.
I have like a bee infestation all of a sudden. Uh-oh. Like flash him and they just like are trying to get out. I'm sorry, the druid in me feels really bad, but I have students that are
allergic. Oh, you're so good, man.
I can't have them make a hive in here again. I got somebody one here like it.
You already had them make a hive in there?
Yeah, they're like trying really, really, really hard. I just noticed something that I just had to point out to everybody. If you're checking out TJ's cover for A Shadow's Vendetta, when you were talking, I just could not help but notice, like, even the detail for like the cloak, like you can tell he's been traveling through the forest like a lot. And like holes, and like there are pieces missing because there's like purple, like, you know, purplish color, and then silver like outline. And I just find it so interesting that like you can totally tell. So I think that's like super cool. But you make a really good point. Like Michael stuff too, I just want to point out, is like, I've been talking to a lot of people about this that want to be traditionally published, and I'm like, nothing wrong with that, in my opinion. Like, if that's your goal, it's fine, right? Me, it used to be my goal. Now I'm like, I just want to get my stories to people and want to, like, kind of, like, if I could go hybrid, I totally would, and like use these traditional things to funnel, you know, like Brandon Sanderson as the greatest model, you know. But I just think it's interesting that you make a point. Is like, for Michael, like, if he did not go indie, right? And I think Matt Dinneman with Dungeon Crawl Carl is the same, right? They want him, right? But because of what he's already built, right? Travis Baldry is another one, right? With Legends and Lattes.
Will White, he inspired Michael to be traditionally published or self-published. So if we wouldn't have had that series, then
it's just crazy to think about.
What's that series called? Cradle series. Oh my gosh. Yes. Oh my gosh. I cannot believe I forgot about that. Yeah,
I'm on like the Uncrowned, Uncrowned right now. I'm gonna start that pretty soon. I have like 9 books. I'm like halfway through, or like 70% through. I gotta just like push through the next like month. This month's gonna be one of my biggest months for finished reading and reviews I've ever had. I'm so close to my record. I think my record's like 56. I really want to get to like 58 or 60 for the year. I'm like it's gonna be hard because I'm like pumping out the rest of my novellas and stuff too, but I'm really trying. But I think like Michael, like I can't even imagine.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots, any game you can can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Modo. I like my slots hot. Modo's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Modo Casino. Modo Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Modo, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Modo Casino app today.
Modo Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Modo.us for more details.
Modo Casino. America's social casino.
This podcast is sponsored by IQ Bar.
I've got good news and bad news. Here's the bad news. Most protein bars are packed with sugar and unpronounceable ingredients. The good news? There's a better option. I'm Will, and I created IQ Bar Plant Protein Bars to empower doers like you with clean, delicious, low-sugar brain and body fuel. IQ Bars are packed with 12 grams of protein, brain nutrients like magnesium and lion's mane, and zero weird stuff. And right now, you can get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Try our delicious IQ Bar sampler pack with 7 plant protein bars, 4 hydration mixes, and 4 enhanced coffee sticks. Clean ingredients, amazing taste, and you'll love how you feel. Refuel smarter, hydrate harder, caffeinate larger with IQ Bar.
Go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Again, go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20.
Imagine, like, just those three people, right? If they were not self-published, the amount of people that come on here and talk about them and how they inspired them, I can't imagine if they got a rejection letter from traditional and then were just like, oh, I'm just not going to do this. Like, there have been, by this point, like, I've had to have interviewed like at least 200 different authors. Like, I've had quite a few people come back for a second time, but at least like 200, probably over that by now, or creatives. And it's like wild to think of, like, if those like three alone did not self-publish, like, this industry would be very, very different. So I think that's encouraging, though, right? It's like, who knows who the next Will White or, you know, Michael are, you know, or Matt are, right? Or Travis. Or it could be, you know, maybe, you know, like, there are a lot of female authors, you know, that have been indie. And then them in particular, I think there's quite a few I've known over the years who have gotten, you know, pulled really to go trad. So I think it's really interesting to, you know, to really think about, you know, is that there's nothing wrong with indie, because a lot of, you know, the good things that have been born, I think, that helped to change the industry, whether it's fantasy, sci-fi, horror, mystery, or whatever, really comes down to, like you were saying, like indie as a platform. And I think it's a really good creative way for us, right, to try new things. I was just talking with one of the five authors I interviewed last week about that. We thought it was so interesting. It was like Simon Kuhn and I were like discussing that, I think. And it was just really interesting, though, because I think that's just such a good point. But yeah, like you said, the same thing, though, like, you know, Michael inspired you. I think that's so cool, you know, because I'm holding this book in my hand. So maybe, again, it's the teacher in me, but I'm thinking like, oh, I love when something I did can help somebody do something like this, or, you know, for themselves.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
You know, I just think that's really, really cool. I love me some elves, so I'm all about it. So.
Well, hopefully you'll like mine. Maybe they're a little bit different. They're pretty traditional, but maybe just the slight differences maybe you'll like. So we'll see.
I'm like weird, man. Depends on the mood. Like writing too. I have elves in a couple of settings that are like your typical like Tolkien-esque, but then I have my own setting, Legends of Uma, where I try to explain why you get the traditional elf myth, where it's like, why are they always like druid or ranger like or whatever? Well, I have them like, why to protect the forest or the environment? I have them half chloroplast, so they're actually different shades of green in their skin. And then why are they vegetarian? Well, they're technically vegetarian because they're half plant. So I like the traditional, but I also like when somebody changes things. So me, it just kind of depends on the mood I'm in. But yeah, I think there's so much there that I've never seen anybody really do them the same, if that makes sense. Like even culturally, like there's just always cool things. I love seeing what somebody does that's the same and then different and changes the trope, or just like maybe a different flavor of how you did something. I think that's what makes the genre fantasy and sci-fi so fun, is a lot of people can do the same thing and it's never the same. So
yeah. Well, even if you make like the typical, you know, like Tolkien-esque elves, of like elves being immortal, you know, which is basically kind of, I'm not going to say that my elves are immortal, but there is the line, you know, like no elf has ever died of old age. You know, like these elves don't really know if they're immortal or not. Like no elf has died of old age. We've only ever died by battle or, you know, sickness or something like that. You know, like we've never had anyone recorded of dying of old age. We've seen each other kind of get a little older, that's but cool. You know, who knows? So there is that kind of question, but there is that, you know, kind of, you could, you know, struggle with that immortality that they have to struggle with. You know, they see people, you know, they see the world or people wither and die away, yet they don't, you know, they remain unchanged, you know, something like that. Like, how do they deal with that? You know, that each, how does each individual elf deal with that? Or, you know, it doesn't matter. They don't have to be elves. They could just be somebody who's immortal. You know, like, I love it whenever they pose that in like a Dracula type story. I just think that's so cool. Like whenever they do that with Dracula, I'm like, oh, yes, thank you for bringing that up.
I always find that. Yeah. I always find it interesting. Like, would you be able to like stay sane, right? If you saw so much death, destruction. I read a book recently where like, that's essentially like, what was going on is like the main character was like worried about that. And it's like, because everybody else he knows who has lived as long as he did, you know, has basically gone crazy. And it's like tens of thousands of years, you got to imagine. Yeah. So I love when people like bring different things like that in. Because to me, I'm like, that was in Scrooge McDuck from DuckTales way back when I was like four. I remember there was like a special, it was like a Halloween one or something. And like, yeah, like this guy was around for a really long time. And they like kind of posed that question in a kid's movie. It was like really weird. Yeah, but I remembered that. I was like, oh, wow, this villain is like this old. I can't remember if it was like a genie or who he was. But yeah, like posed that question to me from a writing standpoint really early on. And as a kid, I'm like, man, that's really interesting concept. So I rolled with that when I was writing my own stuff in like middle school, high school, and college. I was like, this is very interesting concept to think about.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
That's really absolutely. Cool. That's really neat. So when it comes to world building, what do you focus on the most? Or maybe first?
It was actually, I think the world building kind of came secondary to it. I think once I had initially gotten the main idea down for the story, kind of like who my main characters were going to be, I then kind of started working on, you know, like the different factions and everything. Which that to me, I think was most important. Cause you know, in this story, the elves have established like an Imperium, which is kind of like this section of land that's, you know, blocked off from most other contact, either men that have either abandoned the place from a war that happened a long time ago. They kind of just fell into despair. Like, I would rather just leave this place instead of, you know, staying to fight. Well, the elves, they all stayed and fought. So they all, you know, established an Imperium, and then there's five different houses of elves, and each one's kind of, you know, a little bit more independent from each other, but they still, you know, come together all under one Imperium and well in the same. So like trying to make sure each one is distinct in and of themselves, and like, how does that affect each, you know, each person in charge's personality or each character from the different house? How does that affect, you know, how do they communicate with other houses? And then, you know, the different, you know, factions of men or dwarves. Dwarves are suspected to be extinct, but, you know, who knows? Maybe that question will be answered in a future book.
How would you know if they're living underground, right? Like, maybe they just...
Exactly. But I think that was kind of the big... part of it was kind of just like figuring out the different factions or the different tribes that kind of just make up this world. And okay, where do these people live? Okay, the elves of House Stag, they live in the forest. The elves of House Stallion, they live on the plains. So it's, you know, trying to establish, you know, like where they each different, you know, where each faction would live. Like the tribe of men that's introduced in the book, you know, the Ruska, they live in the far north. You know, they're very much inspired, if you couldn't tell by the Norska from Warhammer Fantasy. So, instead of like making them like Vikings, I'm like, let me kind of like take a different approach. So how I kind of came up with the Ruska name was I looked up the Rus, from the Viking era, and the tribe, you know, which is basically old Russia, which is where eventually where they all came from. So that was kind of like, let me take more of an inspiration from that part of the world instead of just do the traditional barbaric Vikings and everything like that. So let me try to see if I can differentiate them. for myself, but also, like, you know, try to give them their own personalities as well. So that was that to me, that is the most important, is trying to figure out your people that inhabit your world first, and where your people would live, and like how that has affected how they interact with the world. It could also infect. Wow. It all could also affect how they view the world as well. Like there are certain religious or political beliefs or something like that. So I think that's very important, especially whenever you're world building. I think it's to, if you have a cool map and if you have everything cool, that's really cool. But a story requires people to inhabit that map, whether that's people, animals, or anything like that, you know? So I think it's really important. And it was really important to me to like figure out, okay, where do these people come from? You know, how many of them are there? What different factions are there as well? Mm. So that was definitely, I think, the first part of it. Once I had gotten kind of the main cast of characters down, was trying to figure out, you know, okay, well, where do they belong? You know, which tribe do they belong to? So.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's super cool. I think that makes sense though. Like I had some kingdoms, I was working on a short story and I was like, I just needed like five factions like allied together for a particular reason. And I kind of just like was thinking like, okay, I found one that was closest geographically speaking to where I needed to be, like at the event. And I was like, okay, who would be next to them? And then I found this really cool like Greek fantasy type kingdom picture, but it was like on a lake and like a series of lakes. I was like, oh, that's really cool. So I was like, maybe it could be like forest and then swamps, forest, lakes in the middle. And then when I'm like, if you keep going, I guess the other way, like whatever, east, like I was like, okay, what do I do? But it was kind of interesting because I went like, I did the reverse. I did like geography first and then thought, what type of economy would they have in that geography? And then what type of people would then, you know, like, what would they think? I'm a history teacher, so I just take a lot of things from history. I just change them a little bit. I just want to point it out because it's, I don't think there's a wrong way to do world building. I've asked so many people on here and everybody does something slightly different to come up with something unique. So I think that's one of our strengths, right? As people is like, I don't have to do everything the same way you're doing, or even if I did, it'd still be different. So I think that's really, really cool. So it's really neat.
And you could take it, you know, the approach of, you know, Joe Abercrombie is a writer that I greatly admire and one that I could never possess a fraction of his talent at all. Just an absolutely insane mind that he has. But he doesn't care about world building at all.
unless you're reading The Devils. I'm going to push back.
Yeah,
unless
you're reading The Devils. Yeah.
Holy crap. But he doesn't do as much as other people. But what he does is like laid down so well. I'm just like, holy crap. I don't know what I'm doing at all. Like, I just got done with that book this week for book club. It was incredible. But that's the only book I've read of his so far. I know everybody. I'm so sorry. I bought 10. I just haven't read it.
No, it's okay. I think you would really enjoy it. Everybody kind of claims that his first trilogy and The First Law is their favorite. That's the only books that I've read of his is his first trilogy and The First Law. I've got his standalone stories to read next, which I'm pretty sure that's probably what I'm going to read next. He does. He says he doesn't care about world building, but then I think he accidentally creates an interesting world to you know, read about and everything like that. And that you kind of just, but then again, I think that's the fun, what we were talking about earlier. I think that's the fun exploration of it. You know, like you want to know more about this world, you know, you're not necessarily given every information about it, you know, but it would be interesting to know the ins and outs of it. And he just gives you enough information about it to become intrigued, you know, along with his just insanely good character work and everything like that. So,
I'm like, so I said, like, cause like The Devils is like supposed to be a standalone, right? But like, I'm hoping my buddy are hoping that he like he left enough open at the end where you could easily, where I don't think he wrote himself into a corner, even with a couple of things that happen. I'm just going to say that at the end of the story. And I'm like really excited because I'm like, he left so much. So I'm like, everybody go buy it so we get more, because the world that he did build, it's like an alternative history. So it's like Troy is the city in the east and it's kind of like the Byzantine Empire, but it's Troy. Like Troy came and did that. And there's just so many little things he changed. Like it was just like, it was really cool because he takes something, you know, tweaks a little bit, So you're almost like, you're like, oh, I'm kind of an expert in this, right? Or I've heard of this. And then adds the new thing. Like he, the way that I agree, the way that he did that, I was like, oh my gosh, my friend was like, he calls it lazy world building, but he did it in a genius way, you know?
Really true.
Yeah. He's like, talk about Lord Grimdark. Damn.
Oh yeah. Well, I love, you know, speaking what we were talking about earlier, you know, like different versions of elves, like his versions of elves are like, they're the really bad villains of it and they're invisible. You know, like that's that's kind of crazy. I'm like, oh, I like that idea. And I love this honestly kind of sold it to on me was like, oh, like, because I think a lot of people, you know, the initial pitch was, you know, like, oh, Joe Abercrombie's doing like a fantasy Suicide Squad type book.
Then
he got to talking about it and he was like talking about the alternate history and everything like that. And he's like, and I made the Pope a 9-year-old girl. And I'm like, I like that idea. That's a very interesting idea. I love that. Yep. That's so funny.
And it was interesting. Like, yeah, like God. So like instead of Jesus being a dude and a carpenter, it was like, I think it was like a, she was a, it was a girl. It was the daughter of God. And then it was the, like a farmer or something like that. Like it was switched, but then, yeah. And then like, she didn't die on a cross. She died on a wheel. So they make the circle, the sign of the circle or the wheel. And then, but it's like, he did such a great job because I teach about this next marking period about the differences between the Western Roman Catholic Church and then the Eastern like Orthodox Byzantines. And like, I thought he played off of that type of history and their animosity towards each other so well. Like there were just so many things. My buddy and I were just like, holy crap. Like I bought a bunch of the First Law. I think I have almost every book he's ever written, like actual book, not novellas and stuff. But my friend's like, well, I guess we'll have to read these as palate cleansers between Sanderson. Now I'm like, yeah, you betcha. Like, reading like Andy Weir and stuff. But yeah, we were very, very impressed with The Devils in general, but the ending in particular and the world building. Like Sunny the elf ended up being like my favorite character besides Jakob, the knight. Like it was like, there was just so many great themes and stuff. I agree with you. I'm like, if I could have like one.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know, I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited, no purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
This podcast is sponsored by IQ Bar.
I've got good news and bad news. Here's the bad news. Most protein bars are packed with sugar and unpronounceable ingredients. The good news? There's a better option. I'm Will, and I created IQ Bar Plant Protein Bars to empower doers like you with clean, delicious, low-sugar brain and body fuel. IQ Bars are packed with 12 grams of protein, brain nutrients like magnesium and lion's mane, and zero weird stuff. And right now, you can get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Try our delicious IQ Bar sampler pack with 7 plant protein bars, 4 hydration mixes, and 4 enhanced coffee sticks. Clean ingredients, amazing taste, and you'll love how you feel. Refuel smarter, hydrate harder, caffeinate larger with IQ Bar.
Go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Again, go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20.
1,000th of his talent one day. In writing or skill, I would feel very accomplished. I was just like, holy crap. Like, oh yeah. But it's like my friend, my buddy and my cousin used to say, like, they used to go up. I'm from Michigan. I used to go to Michigan State and like, but they would say like, before I went there, they would go and play open gym with a bunch of people. And they would say like, there's just different levels of college ball, right? Like guys that didn't make it could have probably made it at another school, right? Or a bunch of them across the country. And there were like different levels. And I think of that with authors too, even like the big names, right? There are some people have a big name. I'm like, it was an okay book, right? It was good, whatever, it's in the genre. Mm-hmm. But when I read The Devils, I was like, holy crap. Like you could just tell, like, that's like Patricia Briggs for Urban Fantasy for me. She's just like a step above. Her latest book was just like, it blew my mind. And she never sticks to the same formula. She just does different things now after like book 6 or 7. And she always does it really well. It just like absolutely amazes me what people like that can do. But yeah, super cool.
Yeah.
So when it comes to characters, speaking of Sunny and the elf and characters, when it comes to characters, what is your main goal?
To kind of just have them be fun to read about. I kind of just made the goal of like, okay, I've been reading a lot and I've just been seeing a lot, not necessarily trying to go against the grain or anything like that, but I'm kind of, you know, not trying to chase a trope of being, you know, I want to write every single character as a relatable person, or write the villains as, you know, relatable or something. I'm like, can't we just have like archetypal characters again, you know, like, again, taking inspiration from Tolkien, you know, cause that's kind of what he wrote. And I really miss that, you know? I really miss that. And there is some relatability, I do think, in the book, and mainly in one character in particular, 40. I think that would, he'll probably be the character that people relate to the most, but also just giving these characters their own personalities and just being, you know, putting them in situations that they would be in, and just having that be interesting to read. Like the Shadow, you know, Talik, he's probably, you know, the most unrelatable character in it. And I just want him to be fun to read about. Like, I don't, you know,
that's like Dritz Durden, right? Like, I can't really, than his empathy for other people, right? And his use of skill to protect others. But other than that, right, like, I can only it's like way out of my league compared to even Joey Abercrombie, right? Like, but he's fun to read, you know. And it's interesting.
That was definitely the big goal, and a big inspiration for the Shadow, aka Talik, was Batman, you know.
Oh, that's cool,
because Bruce Wayne really isn't, I'll be honest, a lot of people are like, oh, Batman could be any of us. I'm like, not really. I'm like, not really. I mean, that's only been like a few things, you know. But, you know, Bruce Wayne, I don't really think is that relatable. But that's what I think makes him so fun to watch, you know. Like, we love seeing Batman beat the impossible odds. You know, we love seeing Batman just through sheer will, just break through it, you know. That, like, that's why Bruce Wayne would be the best Green Lantern, because he just has insane willpower, but the ring never chose him. So
which is a good thing, because he'd probably be wish or something.
Or
Red or something.
Who knows? I don't, I think
there is a cool comic where that happens, though.
It is one of the coolest. Night, so, the Blue Lantern, wasn't he?
I can't remember. I'm like blanking all of a sudden, but it was super cool, though. There was an older one, too, because that was like a newer run. But like, when, oh my God, I'm 38. So it had to have been when I was like 7 or 8. I remember going, and
he was yellow. He was yellow. I forgot.
I cannot remember. Yeah, he was yellow. Yeah, it was super cool. It was super cool. What a great character to model another character after. I'm a DC guy. Marvel's great. Love Marvel, but I'm always I always grew up like reading the DC comics and stuff. And I think they just knew how to make characters a lot better back then. So
That's awesome. Here.
I love Nightwing. Oh my God, he's like probably my favorite DC character. So
absolutely, cool. you're definitely you're talking to the right guy here. I love Marvel, and I really love what they do. I think they've definitely made some really great stories in comics. Shoot, if I ever got to work for Marvel one day, I think that'd be amazing. I'm sure like any comic book fan would too, but you know, I was stuck on a desert island and I had to choose, I'd be like DC. And then unfortunately I'd probably have to choose Image Comics.
Oh, I love Marvel. Image and Valiant, Image, Valiant, Devil's Due Publishing. Like,
Well, cause Image right now with, Kyle Higgins is a writer, comic writer that I really, really love. I love his run on Nightwing that he did for the New 52.
That was great. Serious.
He's writing a series right now called Radiant Black, which you just want like just to get immersed in the beauty of comics, read that series. It's absolutely incredible. It just is everything that's great about comics. It's kind of like Green Lantern-ish mixed with a little bit of Spider-Man-ish stuff. So it's like, if you really like Invincible, you're going to love Radiant Black, I think maybe even more.
That's awesome.
It's absolutely fantastic. So he's, Kyle Higgins is doing some really great stuff over there at Image Comics with his It's called the Massive Verse. So there's Radiant Black, and then there's a bunch of other stories with it as well. So it's a lot of fun. It's just great to be a comic book reader right now. I think, you know.
Ghost Machine? Like I have like literally been buying every single thing. Like Rook Exodus is such a great.
I'm looking forward to it.
I told Nigel, they go, do you want like the other characters too and the arcs and crossovers? I was like, whatever they publish, I was like, give it to me. Cause I feel like we're getting them. Like there was other stuff I thought was going to be more popular that was like, okay, but that wasn't. But like these, like for Ghost Machine, everything just like sold out. And I was so glad that I got the first run of everything. I didn't get any reprints or anything. I got a couple of special covers, but it's like the stories for everything. The art's amazing. Like it's super, super cool. So I highly recommend people to check out any of their stories, but I'm like excited. I'm like, am I on the ground floor of like DC or Marvel? Like that's what it feels like. And everything's like really good. But yeah, Rook Exodus is one of like my favorite, like all time, like comic characters now. So, but there's some other really cool ones too. So like Geiger is a really cool one. With like radiation powers and stuff. It was super cool. But
there's a lot of really good independent comics as well.
I love indie comics. I'm like addicted. I've never really been, that's why I liked DC. I've never really been like if it's unique and has great art and sounds cool, like I'll try it. So I've gotten a lot of Kickstarter ones too. Super cool.
There's this indie comic artist that he draws them and he writes the story, but he does them in black and white. He does them to kind of, because it's kind of like a throwback to the old Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle comics. If you're like a fan of heavy metal, he made the superhero team called the Crimson Six, and they're each of their powers is kind of like one of the subgenres of heavy metal. So there's like a speed metal
cool.
guy, there's like a glam metal guy. So yeah, it's called the awesome. Crimson Six. It's really, really awesome. So yeah,
that's super cool.
What's his name? Hayden Cockrell. Yes. Oh my gosh.
Oh, that's cool.
It's terrible. I forgot that. But yeah, no. it's an indie comic. You should definitely check him out if you like heavy metal, if you like just cool characters being cool, just that's right up your alley. So that's a lot.
Yeah, oh, that's super cool. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. I know we're running out of time, but I gotta ask this question. If you had to fight any group from a fantasy setting, which one would you dread the most and why? Like, who would you not want to fight?
Oh, man. I remember you sending me this question. I'm like, man, that's such a good... Like, who would I be most scared to fight? Because I know my sci-fi answer, but I don't...
Oh, what's your sci-fi answer?
The Flood from Halo.
That's a good one. My author last time I asked this question about 2 weeks ago, they said aliens, like from Alien. I was like, that's pretty terrifying. I like the Flood though.
Because I think with the Xenomorph, it's be like, okay, its goal is to kill you and kind of torment you a little bit, but at least you're dead, you know?
Yeah.
Want to assimilate you into itself. Yep. And I'm like, don't take that. Like, that's the part that kind of freaks me out. It's like body horror type. That's why I think the thing is also so amazing. Because it's body horror type stuff. Freaks me out. So, that's why I'm like, no, the Flood. No, thank you. No, thank you at all.
That's an awesome answer. Gosh, that's a good one.
Again, I'm trying to think of scary ones that I would just be scared of, but I really love all the evil factions too, because I think they have such they look real, because I'm thinking like maybe the Nazgul, but they're like my favorite villains ever, so I don't
that'd be terrifying though. I think that
That would be really scary. That would be really scary.
The Witch King just like knocks on your door and you come out and you're like, holy crap.
that'd be really freaky. I'll just say that the Nazgul. So they're my favorite. I'd be a little scared because you can't kill them. Stab them, you get poisoned. So it's they'd probably be a little scary to fight. Pretty terrifying. and I'm really short too, so they'd be, you know, towering over me.
I'd be like the Flood though too. That's weather. Yeah, the Flood's a great answer. So that was awesome. Somebody gave me that question a while back. I was like, I've just been tweaking ever since. I'm like, this is cool. They wanted me to ask them because they were like curious and they like needed their own time. So I was like really glad somebody from last season asked me to ask them that. So yeah, I just keep tweaking like the same type of question. It's been really fun. So do you have any news, updates, current projects? I know, right? Do you have any news, updates, current projects? Anything like that you can share this before we head out for today?
So right now I'm currently doing my self edits of book two, which I haven't revealed the title yet. I will reveal the title of that at a later date. So I'm going through the self edits of it. I'm really excited for it. I think it's a lot better than book one. I'm very proud of what I was able to do with book one, but I do think this is a much better book. I think I've obviously grown a lot as a writer. Much longer. It's almost twice the length.
I think close to
twice the length. So it'll be a pretty decent sized book this time. I'm doing that about quarter of the way through my self edits. I'm also working on mastering the tracks for the audiobook for A Shadow's Vendetta, which is very exciting. Very, very exciting. Hearing that being read by the great Tom Alexander, who is the narrator for it, he just did such an absolutely fantastic job. I cannot wait for people to hear it. So by the time this episode comes out, it'll be out for a little while. So I'm really hoping.
Oh, that's awesome.
I really hope that he gets a lot of recognition for it. I also hope the composer for the opening music and the closing music for it, I really hope he also gets a lot of exposure and recognition for it as well. So
I'm definitely going to check that out. I love doing the combo. So.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's how I read. I know it might be a little bit more expensive, but like that's how I get immersed into it. I like reading along with the audiobook.
There's so many sales now. Like it's like kind of like I bought one yesterday. I bought Paul Yoder's. Like Red Iron Warp or whatever for like, it was like $438. I was like, why not? You know? And yeah, it was like a really cool narration too. I was like really, really impressed. So yeah, it's super cool.
Yeah. So that's awesome. That's what I got working on right now is book two, audiobook for book one. And we'll see what happens in the future. Maybe by this time next year, I'll be, you know, well into editing book three. So that's the goal.
Yeah. Well, that's super awesome. Well, I just want to remind everybody that you can find TJ's book, A Shadow's Vendetta. The link is down in the description. Look below you, anywhere where you're watching or listening to this podcast. We want to make sure that you are reviewing all whether like copies or, you know, products of things, whether it is the paperback version, hardcover, Kindle, Audible, those kind of things. Helps everybody out in the process. Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. Like TJ mentioned, though, he mentions other people, right? His composer, his audio narrator. So reviewing those products also helps those people get their jobs and more work too. And we couldn't like do these kind of things without them. So please, please, please make sure we're following that theme of reviewing and doing that kind of thing for everybody. It's super helpful. TJ, thank you so much for coming on and for sending me the book. It's absolutely incredible. So I'm like really excited. It's very rare that I read paperbacks or physical books now. So this is going to be one of them though. I keep away from the little guy because I want to make sure it stays nice and pristine. But thank you so much. Make sure you guys again check out that book mail for TJ Cooper, Shadows Vendetta. But make sure you guys are clicking on TJ's links as well. TJ, if there's anything else we can do in the meantime for you before you know this episode releases, please just let me know. And we can, you know, share whatever on our platforms, on the Facebook group, or you know, really anywhere. So if you need anything at all, please just let me know. But other than that, good luck with the audiobook and your edits for book two. I'm really excited to read book one. And you already got me really interested. So I really appreciate the book thanks, and man. I can't wait to review it. So thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks, man. No, I really greatly appreciate you bringing me on here. You've had a lot of really great guests on here. It's just it's a very nice privilege to be on here. Thank you very much, Daniel.
Oh, I appreciate it. Well, thank you so much, my friend. I hope you have a great rest of the day and we'll talk soon. Sound good?
Sound good.
All right. See you.
You ain't you heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino.
You're listening to a podcast right now. Driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, starting your own is free and easy. Upload an episode and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and hundreds more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads like this, even with just 10 listeners a month. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start free at rss.com.